Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
Welcome to the ITSP Magazine Podcasts, a modern, innovative multimedia platform broadcasting ideas and connecting minds. You are about to listen to What If Instead podcast with Alejandro Juarez Crawford and Miriam Plavin Masterman. A show about everyday people reimagining the way things work and tackling the obstacles they face. We explore adventures in democratizing innovation, how the chance to try one's hand at something new affects people and even organizations, what powers they discover, and what challenges they face along the way. Technology is for the people. It should be used for good, not
evil. Technology is for the people. You know, Mim, I'm particularly excited about our guest today. There's a tendency, I think, in the myths of innovation and entrepreneurship, and even leadership and making change, to think it's supposed to happen overnight, right? The innovator gets the light bulb, and then within moments, they're in a conversation with some major venture capitalist, often played by the same kind of actor in the movie version, right?
And 100%. Or they're in their garage, and there's the montage of them like testing all these things in the garage, but the montage is like 5 years and 12 seconds on the screen. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. For sure. And that 12 seconds can be really destructive, right? Because there's this other way of doing things where, what does it mean? There's a phrase I've learned from our guests today, whom we're very excited to introduce in a moment. And the phrase is, don't wish for it, work for it. And I think about someone who's working a problem and they don't even know if the way they're working on it is going to succeed. Often for a period of 10 years, more than a decade. And how do we sustain that if we think we're supposed to have that early success? We're going to get into that theme and many others today. Mim, look, I like to give you a hard time before these episodes, but I think
I'm here
today.
For it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, you ready for it?
Okay, so I'm sneaking in. I'm warmed up. Bring it. Bring it.
All right.
I got
all right.
This.
Just watch
all
out.
Right.
It's when you're not going to be waiting for it. It's going to come by surprise.
All right. You're just going to throw a little knuckleball sometime. Okay. I'm here for it.
That's
Let's
what we
do.
Do
this. Awesome. So today we have the distinct pleasure of being joined by Dr. Andrews Ayuku, who's coming to us straight from Ghana. So we are very excited to have him. He is currently the West Africa manager for the E4 Impact Foundation, which is Entrepreneurship for Impact. He's the lead entrepreneurship trainer for the whole region. He's also a lecturer at the University of Professional Studies and a lecturer at the University of Makini in Sierra Leone. He's worked across a variety of countries and continents in Ghana, Kenya, Sierra Leone, Italy, Pakistan, Senegal, Canada. In addition to all of his extensive academic work, he's done private sector work for banks, including the Bank in Africa, the United Bank for Africa. He's done work in innovative microfinance. He's done work for the Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning. So he's a man who wears many hats. And we're very excited that he gets to add another hat to his collection, which is podcast guest.
Yes.
So welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm excited. Thank you very much. I'm excited.
Welcome, Andy. Thank you so much for taking time with us here, wearing new hats in your collection of many. I'm Alejandro Juarez Crawford, and this is my co-host, Mim Plavin Masterman, here with you today. And we're on a mission together here to make experiments of your own feel as normal as watching videos on your phone. Welcome to What If Instead, the podcast. Now, Andy, I'd love to start us with the people that you serve, who you work with, and you want to enable them to ask the big question, what if instead, and respond with experiments of their own. Maybe you can talk about the people you can serve and that you're here to serve and some of the ways that you're hoping to equip them or remove obstacles to their asking that question with their own experiments.
So basically, I work with students at the university who want to develop their business ideas. So the key issue is that there are no work available, and we are going through the economic conditions. So people are being told, people are being encouraged to start their own work. But what kind of work would they start, especially with the kind of social issues that we have in this country? And other countries I've worked with, social issues are key, from malaria, from environmental issues, from solar. Even in my country, Ghana, now we are having serious issues with electricity. A lot of businesses are going down. So the key question when people come to me is, that, what should I start doing? What can I do? How can I be successful? The how and the why questions are key to them. But it's very interesting for you to know that their mindset is one of the key things that I usually work on when I'm helping them to develop a business idea. It's not just your passion. It's something you want to do. Are you wishing for it, or you want to make it happen? Are you ready to put in your time, your efforts, and your energy for the journey? Because the journey is unpredictable.
You know, if I'm hearing you right, Andy, you're making a distinction from just having a passion. It brings me back to that idea of what I wish for versus what I'm willing to work for. You're making a distinction between having a passion for something and putting in the energy, the consistent effort, all of that work to develop solutions. Am I hearing that right?
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. For them to show commitment to whatever they want to do, whatever they dream, they have to. And that's where the challenge comes from. Because how do you get their state of mind from wishing to making the necessary efforts to make it happen? We can take a year, 2 years, and getting ready for it. Basically, most of them are not ready for it. So you need to work, help, support, coach, mentor them throughout the journey. And they'll be very successful. Yeah.
So, Andy, this is fascinating because as I'm hearing you talk about the social challenges that are being faced with the students that come to you in Ghana, I'm also hearing a lot of sustainability concerns that are kind of embedded or wrapped around the social concerns. Your point about solar, your point about malaria. Sadly, malaria is back, right, because of climate change and increasing conditions of temperature throughout the world. Like, how are your students thinking about the social piece of entrepreneurship? Is it social for sustainability? Is it social for the community in Ghana? Kind of, are they moving between the levels? What are they doing?
So initially, when you talk about social issues, the mentality for a typical Ghanaian, a typical West African, is government issue. Government needs to do this. Government needs to do that. Now, government is not doing it, so who's going to do it? So you need to solve community problems. So one of the first things that I've learned with my encounter with Alejandro and the project that we did is to think about your environment. What can you solve? And currently, when I enter into my social enterprise class, what social issue have you identified that you can solve? Mm-hmm. And I learned that from my interaction with him. So this helped them to start thinking about the community. What is there for me to solve? And there's data. There are people dying. There are people having issues. How do I solve them? Then when they come back to you, they come back with a concept note about starting a social issue, social intervention in the community, and how you can support them to make a business case out of it.
I mean, I think this is fascinating because there's public health implications, right? Yeah. There's entrepreneurship implications. There's profit implications.
Exactly.
Like, how do you help the students sort of sort that all out as they're developing these ideas?
So I'll help them to put down together a business. We use this social model canvas, social enterprise model canvas, for them to put something together, because I can't introduce you to an incubator and I can't introduce you to an accelerator. Me, myself, I can't help you when you don't know what you are about. So we do all those analyses to get everything ready to enable them to even talk about it. And they had opportunities to pitch about the problem that they want to solve. And that is the starting point. But we spend time to do a market research to find out what will be the impact. I'm sure there are problems, but is it a real problem? Are people suffering from it? Is there data to back whatever you want to do? So we go through all this, and it's a journey with a lot of patience. Yeah.
You know, I love that line, I can't help you if you don't know what you're about. And I want to come back to that. But first, I'm hearing you describe a shift. You said many people say the government needs to when it's a problem.
Exactly.
The government needs to handle this. And maybe we can even think broadly about the human impulse to say, see a problem and say, you know, somebody needs to do something about this, right? Yes. And then on the other side, you're describing this difficult process of sustained effort to solve, to be involved in creating a solution yourself or taking part in that. Yeah. Can you talk to us a bit, maybe even tell us a story about one of the young people you've worked with and how they went through that transition or shift?
So one of the students I worked with was actually at the law school when I met him. He came for one of my By the Fireside program where I was telling them to identify a social issue. One of the social issues he identified was the coconut husk. When people finish drinking coconut together, they just throw it into the gutter and result in choke gutter. So I asked him, what can you do about it? This gentleman went to do a research, came back and then pitched to me that he can use the coconut husk to come up with a charcoal. He can use it. Apparently, there's a technology. I said, go ahead and do more. Currently, I'm sure one of these days we'll have the opportunity to speak to him. His name is Amin. He has built, he goes around to collect these coconut husks, send them into charcoal, and the number of trees, because in Ghana, people use a lot of charcoal, but we come from wood, burning of wood, which may cause deforestation and all those things. So this gentleman has been able to, through the problem he identified, because I said, go back to the community. He said, no, government should be able to clean the road. Government should be able to do that. Government is not ready to do anything. The same applies to one of my students who have gotten there. There are a lot of waterborne diseases. We don't drink good water. That's why the pipe-borne water is an issue. So he did the research and so realized that there's a tablet that when you put in the water, it will help you to prevent water blindness. He wasn't waiting for government. And I can give you a lot of stories that I've had opportunity and the privilege to work with people solving and social issues in the community, from malaria and other things, just to keep. And even solar as well. People are trying to develop solar that will help, because now we have a lot of light offs. We have even given, there's a song on it and other things, just because we are waiting for government to do it. But in your own way, how do you solve the social problems in your community?
You know, what really strikes me about Amin's story and the way you're thinking about this is that research you talked about, what can you do about it? Unless Amin had gone out and experimented with the husks of the coconuts and the charcoal and everything that I'm hearing about in this story, he would never have known how he could be an agent of change, how he could solve this problem. Is that right?
Exactly. So you have to go around to check, are the coconut husks available? Where are they producing it from? Who is in charge of that? Where can he collect it? And which dump site can he put it to start the project? So if the raw materials wasn't available through market research, I'm not sure this will work, because we really wanted to have impact. How many gutters will he be able to clear? And one of the things he did was to get containers to collect it. So he had points in Accra where he was collecting this rubbish, this coconut husks. Because a lot of people drink coconut every day. It's all over the place. But where do they throw their husks? In the gutters. So the gutters are always choked. And since he started collecting it, gutters that are choked are just reducing. But he did a research. And Andrew, as I said, I have to work on his mindset to tell him it's possible. Because he wanted to be a corporate lawyer. And I asked him, what solution are you going to solve for the community? But now, he knows the solution that he's solving now. Sure.
We can call this the corporate lawyer's principle. If we could just take everyone who wants to be a corporate lawyer or a management consultant or an investment banker and put them through this process Amin went through, we could really change the world.
Okay. Exactly. Just so we're clear, like that one landed a little bit. I was a management consultant, so, you know, I feel very seen right now, but maybe not in a good way. But as I'm listening to you talk, Andy, I was thinking about your background and how you have background in microfinance, you have background in banking, you even have background in government agencies in terms of the ministry. How did you come to decide, okay, entrepreneurship is where I'm going to be? Because if you look at your, you know, your sort of through line or your track record, it sort of seemed like you were heading to a traditional banking or finance kind of a position.
Exactly. I did my first degree in finance. So I'm a finance guy.
Okay.
But when I was working at the Ministry of Finance, I had the opportunity to go and stay in the northern part of the country.
Wait, and so I was being harsh to both of you when I talked about consultants and finance guys?
Okay.
I didn't know. All right, go ahead. Excuse me.
So I don't know whether I've told Alejandro, I had opportunity before starting the microfinance to go to India for 3 months to go and work in Hyderabad, Bangalore, where you were working with the low level people, with the poorest of the poor, to understand. I was part of the team that developed the microfinance policy for Ghana. So when I came back, then I realized that there are a lot of social issues that can be solved by individuals. But that didn't change my mind. I decided to go to the bank. And I realized the bank wasn't serving the people who can bring change. All that they were interested in is the bottom line. So I took it upon myself when I left the bank 6 years ago. I said, I want to go into academia, but I want to focus on helping people change their mindset. So myself, I started a community service, going to community rural areas where they won't have the opportunity to sit in my class, to organize sessions for them, tell them how to start a business, how to develop a business idea, and don't wait for government. So then I entered into academia. Then I realized that it's a call to help people to solve social issues. And the best way to do that is to write articles, go on radio to speak to people, let people believe what you have to do. But I have to equip myself. And that's how I got to know Alejandro. I realized that I need to position my mind on what I want to do. And I needed resources. And the best resource I've gotten so far is from his team, which has helped me to grow. So every week I write in the newspapers about issues, social issues, issues that you people don't want to talk about. I'll bring it up. How businesses are suffering, how businesses are more into profit, but not into society, not into people. No. So everybody wants to make money. So now when you talk to me that you want to make, what is the triple bottom line, for instance? Why not the society? Why not the community? You can't send me a pitch without talking about the negative effect and the positive effect of your business model.
You know, Andy, before you go on, and we want to take this in some interesting directions, I think Mim's about to, can you just describe for our listeners the team you're talking about? You're characteristically humble. There's no question that the rest of us in that international group, we're learning from you. But can you talk about what exactly are you referring to? What kinds of practices or tools or methods are being useful to make this shift happen that you're describing?
So there's a social entrepreneurship global program led by Alejandro that I had the privilege. My university joined, and that was where the learning opportunity, the other side of social entrepreneurship, started for me. That's where the love itself started, because I had a weekly meetings with people I know I would never meet on my own, and they were sharing experiences from my other countries, from Japan, from Indonesia. There's a guy from India, from Bangladesh, from... And they were solving issues with students. So I also presented my students. And my students were shocked. Because the social issue you find in Ghana, somebody has a solution somewhere else. But I'm not sure I'll never have the opportunity to bring all this together for me to appreciate what I'm actually doing. And that is where the motivation comes from. So he brought together a group of intellectuals who want to solve a problem. You see, I don't know the number of people I've met who really want to see something happen. No. Everybody is trying, but I met a group that want to bring change. So on a weekly basis, they're asking you the change you want to bring. You can't go to such a meeting and keep quiet. So that is what my mind, with all my years of working, that group changed my perception. I hope it will be open to more people to change their minds. Because I got a lot of... In fact, I must admit to you that I'm using some of the materials to teach my social entrepreneurship class now. All the material I've changed. The university asked me, where did you get this material? So I said, I got it from them. I've not told you, but I've changed. I've put my name on it, but it's yours.
It's ours.
Yeah.
So Andy, I wanted to follow up on one thing that you had talked about before the comments you had just made, where you were talking about whenever you're getting someone to present a business model to you, you're making them present the positive and negative sides of the business model. To me, that's such an unusual but really important way to frame a business model, because so many companies, especially in startup mode, don't try to measure the negative costs of their product. They don't want to know the externality. They're like, that's someone else's problem, right?
Because Mim, for listeners who might not know what an externality is, can you break that down?
Sure. Okay. So an externality is generally where there's a negative cost in some way of using a product or service, but that cost is pushed off of the company to neighborhood or community members or even customers. So some examples might be people buying Airbnbs and taking rental properties and making them vacation properties. What that does as an externality is it makes rent less affordable for people in those communities. And that's an example, but that's not accounted for as a cost of Airbnb's business model.
Got it. So it's a cost of what I'm trying to do that I'm making somebody else bear. I'm externalizing it, right? Okay, thank you.
Right.
Go on.
Exactly. No, perfect. So Andy, so to my question, like, how are you getting students to measure this? Because that's one of the things I'm fascinated by is, like, how do we think about the cost or the burden that our businesses put on a community or a society? And then how do we really make a different kind of cost-benefit analysis when we're evaluating what to do?
So basically, I look at the number of people you have been able to employ over the period of time when you started your business. That's the impact on them, the number of people you have employed. And then the community. Are you polluting the society? Are you polluting your community? What kind of pollution? How are you making sure that the polluted water is not, especially those into soap making? I have students who have the business idea to develop soap making and other things. How do you manage the wastewater? Initially, they think, I just pour it in the gutter. No, it's a chemical. You have to manage it well. So exactly. So those are some of the things that I do. And those who are into other businesses that disturb the society, what are you doing about it? So you talk about that before you start with your partnership, your value proposition, and other things. Mm. And it's helping them to think. One of my two students recently had, there's a bank in Ghana, Advanced Savings and Loans. My student does more organic farming because of the issues related to using all those fertilizers that he have. Now the bank are partner him to go and train local farmers because of that social enterprise business idea. So he wanted to do and sell. When he started thinking about the social issue, the bank is saying that, listen, for my corporate social responsibility, I want you to lead. And I have a lot of examples of students who are rather going to pitch for money, they go and pitch for collaboration to solve a social issue for a community that has a problem, and they are able to measure how many people will you employ. What is the effect of this? So basically, that is where I come from. And through this program, I've had the opportunity to change people's minds, not just about the money, about the society and the community.
And you're really making me think in a way that I haven't thought very often, which is I'm used to thinking of a social enterprise or innovation as solving a problem. And there's financial issues and there's impact. But what you're helping me shift in my thinking, and it's a really exciting idea to me, is that part of what makes an enterprise a social enterprise is just that we're looking at the whole picture. It's just that we're thinking, okay, which costs are you making somebody else pay for? And what's the impact if you're dumping in that water stream, right? That it's almost like if we don't do that, then it's like we have a very narrow window that we're looking through. So it's a bit, maybe this is obvious to you two, but to me, it's a very different way of looking at enterprise to say, actually, what we need to do is open up our focus to show the whole picture, not just a little part of it. That's a radical idea to me.
Sure.
I agree. Sure. And I think in America in particular, it's radical. For sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in America, we have like a little tiny pinhole that we look through called shareholder value maximization this quarter. And if you can do that, forget it if you ripped everything else out of the business. But seriously, you're really making us think. And there's at least a couple directions we could take this discussion in now. One would be, you know, you're enabling folks to make this shift in their thinking from somebody needs to do this to I'm going to figure out a way to do this, from book research on how it's been done before to learning through researching what could happen from a shift from, well, I'm thinking about part of this problem to I'm thinking about the whole problem. Those are all changes, not just in how I draw my business on a canvas. They're changes in mindset. And I want to ask you, how do you enable folks in a systematic way? Are there systematic ways that you're helping to make that change? And what are the ways, the tools, the ways of interacting with students that are enabling you to do that? How are you making that possible?
So usually at the university, I organize a bootcamp, a 3-day bootcamp, using the design thinking model tools, where we go through the tools and then I allow them to spend their own the rest of the day coming up with something. So they'll come up with all these ideas so big. They want to solve the problem of Ghana. They want to solve the problem of Sierra Leone, all those countries. And then we spend time to bring it together. But one of the things I do to support them is to do the research for them. So your initial desktop research, I have to help you. Because when you ask them to do a desktop research, if you come out with a hypothesis for them to go and test in the market, it becomes an issue. For instance, they'll go and test it with their family members and they tell them everything is okay. No. So we organize a focal group for them. And some of them feel you have to pay. No, you don't have to pay. You have to do it yourself. So even when I go on the field or I get people for you to speak to, you need to do it yourself, not me, because you'll be on their journey. I want you to appreciate the support, and you need to be committed. You need to be reliable and you need to be adaptable. These are the skills that I tell you. If you have a business idea, are you adaptable to situations? Are you reliable? Are you committed? The moment you start asking such questions, then they will run away because they want to do a government job. And I realize you are there because a government job, when you are there, you just get paid. You don't come up with any innovative idea. Then I use the innovative canvas, which will help you to redesign that innovation that is in your mind.
Wait, let me jump in for a second because I want to just state two things I've heard from you that are really interesting and tell me if I've got them right. One is that at the beginning of the process, folks often want to solve problems that are so big that they're vague, right? We're just going to make everything perfect in Ghana or in the world.
Exactly.
And you're forcing them to actually design practical solutions. I'm hearing about that, but I'm also hearing that you're challenging them not to ask you for how to do it, but to figure out, to derive solutions that might not be known. And you use these words adaptable and reliable, right? So if you could, in a few minutes, continue with what you're saying, but give us a story about that shift again that you've just described, if it's not too much.
So one of the things that I've learned is to enable people to own whatever they want to do. So I will help you, but you'll be part of the process ongoing. And the part of the process from the beginning, I'll let you know that it's not an easy journey. I won't lie to you about it. So how flexible are you if things change? So you've seen a community, you want to do ABCD, and a telecom company comes to solve that particular problem. What do you do? Is that the only social problem that you are going to be pertaining to? So I have a lot of students, oh, please, Andy, you said I should do this. I want to do, somebody else is doing it. What other problem have you identified? So the problem identification takes a time for them. But if you are not adaptable, you are not reliable, you yourself, you need to be committed. If you have to get to a community at this time to interview them, you need to be there. Then, so it's a field work I want you to experience and own. So you need those skills before we go on the field. And I'll tell you point blank, you won't think about it. So the bootcamp moves you from the classroom where we have the hypothesis to test. You do the questionnaire during the bootcamp. So when you get to the field, you go and talk to the people and you come out with your results. But we need to validate it.
No, this is fascinating. So as you're thinking about this whole process of getting students to kind of change their mindset, to think about like a problem-solving process is something dynamic, is something ongoing, it's like the parameters are going to change, right? The rules are going to change. How has your approach to even teaching that changed over the years that you've been doing this?
So over the years, in the past, I felt I wasn't helping them. I wasn't challenging their mindset. It was just normal. Making them feel that they would just be the Bill Gates of Ghana and all those big names. I remember one of the students I went to his house. He has posted all those pictures in his room. He's wishing to be the Amazon chief executive. And I realized you don't work for it. Those guys are adaptable. They are flexible. Their mindset is different. They need to change. Mm. The guy has built the business and given the business to somebody to run because that business is going to be sustainable. What have you done? So then my approach now is to tell you the truth from the beginning and let you own your business. If I've not owned the business that I'm doing, the skill that I want to develop, I'm yearning to learn more. I'm at that stage that I really want to help you to be successful. So the way I'll come to you when I'm going through this, the only choice you have is to survive because I'm going to work through, I'll tell you the truth, and I'll build your mind. You know, after the session with you, the opportunities I saw from other countries, then I started thinking aloud. I said, no. So what have I been doing? Because people have solutions, and people are working on solutions. Why are we working on problems in Ghana? Why do we think an IMF or somebody else will come and give us money to do ABC? When else we can use our mind to change? So when I work on your mind and we start, in this approach, I'm so happy. I'm a Christian, so I give glory to God. Since I entered into this, it's never because of monetary issues. Then I have stayed in the bank and make a lot of money. I've been teaching bankers in Africa, but helping people going out and mentioning my name, that I've helped them to employ people, that is where my excitement comes from.
That's amazing. No, I think what you're doing with the students is just, it's really transformative. I mean, it sounds like it's even transformed you. Like you're just lighting up as you talk about it.
Exactly.
It's very interesting. Any of us who's been an instructor or a facilitator can probably relate to something you just said, which is when someone is doing something meaningful and then they turn around and they say that you helped them do it. I was at an award recently for green entrepreneurs in the Hudson Valley, and this amazing entrepreneur wins the award, and I'm so impressed. I'm like, wow. And she comes back and she says, actually, it was this one session that we had that got me on this road. And I'm thinking, what? And you feel a kind of chill, but I want to switch from that chill that keeps many of us going to ask you, you described this really interesting thing. You've referred to it twice, of all these people in their respective countries working on problems and how that relates to this idea of ownership. And I want to explore that a little bit. We tend in international work to have these ideas that someone's got the perfect model, right? And, you know, it comes from, we're taking our models from Davos or the IMF or, you know, some McKinsey or something like that, right? And we're showing folks how to do things in this great way. You're describing something which sounds so different from that it's almost unrecognizable to me, which is this multilateral collaboration and comparison. Can you talk a little bit about that? This podcast is on a website, a magazine about technology and society called ITSP. And I'd be fascinated to hear, how is that multilateral piece working? And why does it matter?
So one of the things that I've realized over this journey is that, for instance, I was in Sierra Leone in January, and the kind of problems people are trying to solve using technology is quite different from the same problem that people are trying to solve in Ghana. So people have farms where they are using technology to tell them when they have to water the farm, when the plants are going to grow. Technology, I think they got the technology from a particular country. I don't know which country, but it helped them. So the farmers over there is something that they are exploring. Mm-hmm. Now, this is changing the lives of people in that country. Now, come to my country, Ghana, where we are now introducing new things into the ways we do things in Ghana. For instance, so people are not more concerned about social issues because we have free education, government, and all those things. And that is hampering how people think. So now people need to go and do new things, new learning. So how do they do that? So I'm equipping people in class, for instance, to think about the new dimensions of solving problems, using new technology, using new media to reach out to. So I have a student who is into advocacy, especially about breast cancer. We have a huge issue about breast cancer. In Ghana, when somebody is diagnosed with breast cancer, they think it's spiritual. How do you change people's mindset? They don't come for treatment. They think somebody is doing something for them. This is something that you need to use social media to do. This is something that you need to get to the community to do. This is how you have to build it. So I'm helping to build a social enterprise solving this particular problem. And there are lots of social issues that technology diversifications are key things that has to come in to be able to close the gap. I don't know whether that answers your question.
It's incredible what you're saying, and you're really making me think, because I have the habit of thinking technology is something where it's made somewhere in the world and then we just distribute it to people, right? But what I hear you saying when you use the word community and when you talk about breast cancer as a community solution and to help someone with breast cancer involves knowing the community, you're making me think that it is only by knowing the specifics of people and how they're interacting and the problems they're facing. It's the same as the coconut husks you started with. Only by knowing the specifics that we will actually be able to use technology and other solutions effectively. Am I hearing you right?
Exactly. So in Ghana, it's more like October, Breast Cancer Day, Breast Cancer Week is done. Nobody traces them. Those people who get they are diagnosed with it. Nobody traces them. They go back to the churches. They go back to the society. Become then they die. But this can be worked on. Somebody needs to trace them. So this lady told me that, listen, I want to set up a social enterprise. And she's a medical doctor. I want to follow up to them. I said, start keeping the data. Who are the organizations in charge? And she started last year. And this year, she told me by October, I have something to show you. The number of people I'll be able to trace to change their mindset. Why don't you come for treatment? Why do you want to stay away? Nobody's doing it. So you see how the whole thing works. So now she's building a community around that idea. How to sell it, how to grow it, how to touch people. Because government will not do that. Nobody will do that unless she solves it. So these are key things I'm telling people to follow up. People suffering from chronic illnesses, how do they solve it? How can you use technology? Telling them this is what it, even sending news to them about what they need to do perfectly else. And I learned this from the interactions I had with some of the students. You realize some of the students, the kind of solution they were proposing, from Palestinians to all those places. And that's changed my mindset that everything is possible. You need to create a community and have an impact. I'm more concerned about the impact, Alejandro, that you are not just doing anything. It's not about the profit. But how many people do you think you can impact this year? How many lifestyles will you be able to change? How many people will you bring them into this solution that you have?
I mean, this is just fascinating, because I think it sounds like you're using technology to create these communities around public health initiatives.
Exactly.
And then getting the sort of building almost like a, when in the States we would call it like a bandwagon effect or like a snowball effect of like people go, they see the impact. Now they come back to their communities. They're telling people they went, and that becomes the proof that other people need to get involved.
Exactly.
I mean, I just think it's amazing. I mean, I guess I would ask as a sort of a follow-up to this discussion, like, are there, if you were to say, okay, these are the top two or three public health issues we're going to try to address in Ghana that your students are trying to address, like, what would they be? How would you sort of think about them?
So the first one is breast cancer, because I have a survivor
who
came and told me she wanted to start running this, and we are working on it. So she's the main person now. That's the first thing. Another social issue, let me think, on health is about female hygiene, the pad that they use. So they are part of Ghana whereby people don't really have the menstrual pad.
Okay.
They use certain other things. It has its effects. There are some places too, when they are doing their menstruation, they don't go to school because of all the stigma. So this lady contacted me that she wants to have an effect. She wants to change people's mindset. And she heard me talking on radio about identify social issue. Tell me what social issue you have. I'll help you do a business model out of it. So she called me. She said, in my community, this is the issue. What can you do? So we did a research. And now we have a company that is ready to distribute every month. Because people don't go to school. People don't go to work. So in a community, which I'm even yet to visit it, but we are always on call. I said, if you have any identify the social issue, call me. I'll help you to use. And the tools I got from Alejandro's session, which I hope it will be big and open to a lot of people, because it has changed my thinking, my perception. I'm ready to solve issues because of what I saw, because of what I met. And it was, I think it was for 10 weeks or something, where every week you need to dedicate 2 hours listening to people pitching solutions. Then I realized that why don't I extend this to my country? So the breast cancer leader said, you can do it. And I gave her the boot camp. She went out, did the hypothesis, and is running. The lady with the menstrual issue too told me about this. In the community, it's a big issue. What can I do? I said, let's make it a business case. Because I wanted it to be a real problem. Alejandro, that's one of the things I learned from you. If the problem is not real, what are you trying to solve? There's no impact. There's no measurement. Because I'm sure anybody who is supporting her will come. How many people have you solved their problem? They don't want to see numbers. So that's how I started from. And basically, you don't need much money to do this. You need a mindset. You need a devotion. You need your effort. You need to be committed to solve this social issue. So my two main things, yes.
So a quick follow-up on that before. I promise I will let Alejandro say something. But my quick follow-up on this is, if you're talking about getting these products to the rural areas, my like logistics hat goes on. I'm like, how do you actually do that? I mean, isn't it really hard to get this, all these products to all these different small villages and small towns and cities throughout Ghana?
So now we've identified 3 communities that are close to each other. Okay. That when you go just a distance, you'll be able to have the effect on them. And that's what we are doing. So
okay.
Because of logistics and because we don't have any funding now, my focus is that when you come, identify a community that when we go to one community, we can meet 2 or 3 people. A maximum of this number of people. We meet opinion leaders. This is what we want to do. And to be, it will shock you how the chiefs will tell you, this is what I want people to bring to me. Nothing.
Okay.
It's a major problem. I can't solve it. Are you using technology? Come and do it. And they register. They all have Android phones. You keep sending them messages every week just to alert them. Have you gone for your treatments? How are you feeling? If you're having any pain, we are coming to do this. And this is what helps. So we are not doing it for the entire country. I want a success story. And I've told those guys that they are coming to me, you need to have a success story. And I also give you an opportunity for all the media people in Ghana to come and take a video of what you are doing. I'm sure you'll be able to work something and continue. Yes. So that's how I'm empowering people.
I'm hearing such a distinct paradigm from the ones that govern business, international development, government. And I'm going to try to pull 3 things that I've heard as I've listened to you, Andy. One is it's about owning, figuring out the solution. It's not my professor's going to tell me. It's not the government's going to do it. There's no they that need to solve this, right? It's I or we. And that is such a, you know, we talk about entrepreneurship as if it was this specialty, right? But what you're describing is owning what it means to solve the problems we're confronting us, whether I'm a breast cancer survivor or I'm looking at polluted waterways or any of the other issues you've described. So this idea of owning it, but then that goes to something that in many ways is even more sort of shocking relative to the usual paradigm, which is this idea that when we're deriving that solution, it's not 90% what somebody figured out somewhere in the world that we just then bring in and maybe 10% local application. What I'm hearing is you're flipping that, and that what makes a solution work is what I know about the people interacting and about the specific, maybe it's not people, maybe it's infrastructure or a natural system and the practices people are using. That and it's when you say it, it seems, well, of course, and yet it's so different from the way I was trained to think, where it's like, no, we'll figure out the best solution, go in and, you know, solve it. And I'm hearing something very different. And that leads full circle to where you started, which is the third big idea that I'm hearing, which is as I go through that process of owning and then deriving it, how does it transform my mindset, my ability to stick with something when it doesn't yield right away, when I don't derive the solution quickly, when it takes that long and sustained effort? So those 3 ideas, the ownership, the deriving by doing, where the specifics are what constitute the solution, and the mindset change that happens through the process of doing that, are really striking as I listen to what you're saying, Andy.
Exactly.
I was going to say one quick follow-up on this is that what I think is one of the most interesting sort of dynamic pieces of it is the direct input from the local community as field work, as like hypothesis testing of like, okay, I think this is going to work, but I'm actually going to go try it with these people and then come back and refine my thinking. And I think that there's a way in which, again, that's a very different way than we're traditionally thinking about prototyping. Like normally we think about, we're just going to roll the solution out across a variety of places and it will be fine. And in some ways, this is parallel to like my own research is on repurposing abandoned infrastructure, like old rail lines and turning them into parks and things like that. And one of the challenges there is that the parks are physically somewhere. You can't move them. Mm. The remnant is the remnant. And so how do you think about bringing the local community into it to make it work for them? Like, what do they think this remnant should be? And so I guess to come back to your point is how do you make sure that the students are keeping the communities they're trying to serve in the center of the problem they're trying to solve? Even as the dimensions are shifting, how do you make sure they keep that need to serve or who they're serving centered in front?
So one of the key things that we need to do is, I told them that, identify your key stakeholders. You really have to identify your key stakeholders. And you can't do anything on the social enterprise measurement class without identifying your key stakeholders, without even speaking to me. So me, during the boot camp, you need to identify those you are going to speak to in the key stakeholders for you. Because this thing would never be successful. A gentleman started doing a project, never spoke to the chief, the community leaders. They closed him down. That's why the father is going to be beneficial to them. And that's a very big lesson to me. He started a hospital or something. People said, that's not what we needed. So for me, in my bootcamp class, you need to come up. Even if there's an MOU between you and them. And surprisingly, when they're able to do this from the beginning, they're able to get free land, free accommodation, especially when they understand what you're coming to do. So taking that from that perspective is a must. And anybody you ask who have been doing my session, my bootcamp, will tell you that for Andrews, the first thing we tell you to do is identify your key stakeholder. Go and talk to them. They should even tell you that they are willing to implement it. Because if you fail, the community has failed. The stakeholder has failed. So I try to lock down the stakeholder. So the breast cancer guy, the lady, the one doing the menstrual, the queen mother actually sits in state to direct. But who will give you the figures in the community about the people there? Who will give you those, the household? Who lives with them? You are just coming with a solution. But I let the community, the stakeholders, the opinion leaders own this. So it's easier for them to call them for a meeting. It's easier to assemble them. It's easier to get them to accept. You don't have to talk a lot. And that is how the measurement will work from our side. In Ghana, for instance, that is the best way. If you get them to understand, you are quick to be successful.
Andy, you're giving me this idea, as you say this, as you describe these powerful projects and endeavors and changes, that the only thing universal is our specificity.
Yeah.
The thing we all share is that there are a lot of details the way we do things. I was having coffee yesterday with a guy called Mike Hine, who's was for many years our county executive in New York State, where I live. And he talked about a time when there were veterans of wars and there was a high rate of homelessness. And he said, look, let's solve this. And everyone said, no, you can't. That's a federal. Veterans is a federal issue. Mm-hmm. I said, but wait a minute. What do we have here to solve it? And they ended up creating a center and doing a bunch of great things in Kingston, New York. And what struck me as you were speaking is we have this tendency to assume, and even you're so charitable that you sort of say, well, I'm learning this from the folks in all these other parts of the world, right? But I actually think listeners, if I could wish us to note one powerful thing in what you're saying, it's that what you've described is something that is relevant to all of us. It's the one universal thing is that we have to get into the specifics with that agency and ownership to solve these problems. And to me, that is an idea that can keep us powered during very challenging times we're living in.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not one way. It's all. It's each of us learning from the other, right? Yeah. So we got to get rid of that idea that that somebody's teaching and somebody's learning, and we got to start listening to what we derive specifically and taking inspiration from that. That's what I'm hearing as you speak.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. So this mindset, this new me you see now, is because of the experience I got from a session I had, not on my own, but I was selected to join, not alone, but I took it myself to spend money, and it became part of my schedule because I was putting in time and effort and my emotions because I wanted to learn something. And when I did my background on all the various professors, all the students, and at every point in time when we have a session, we have over 150, 200 students, and I keep all those records. I was actually keeping records of everything because I wanted to bring change. So my mindset had to change, and I don't want to be the same person after that session. If I get the opportunity of joining next year or this year, I want my contribution to be far more better. So I wanted to be a better person. And that is exactly what I take to people I meet. You can't be in my session and be the same. Or you drop out. You can't be in my session without thinking about change. Because I'll call you as a guest speaker to come and talk to people about what you have learned.
Yeah.
So it's a competition. You have to be part. No, every week, if I have a class session on the weekend, I will call you as a guest speaker because you've learned from me. Tell people that. And so nice competition. People are sending me messages. I'll be able to do this. I've signed an agreement with the chief. He's calling the people for me to come and do the social issue. Initially,
What were you going to add? Excuse me.
No. This is going to be short. Initially, when I was talking about social issues, people would say, no, it's government issues. Leave it to government. Are you now government? But now people are saying, I want to come to you to learn. I want to have a change. Me, myself, I want to be involved in the change. So you see the mindset that has changed? Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Please.
You can't be in my session and be the same. That's what I heard you just say.
No, that's a very big challenge. Yeah. And I'll tell you from the
walk out. Steve, you could say it again. You walk out.
Exactly. You walk out with that perception that you are going back and coming back to change people's lives.
Yeah.
To talk to people. And you have to be successful. You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I love this. So no pressure. No pressure. You have to be successful. There's no other option.
If it takes you 2, 3, 4 years, I'll still be following you. You are still my friend. I'll still help you. But you need to come back and tell people what you have changed. So the first time is get a society, get a community, get a stakeholder that believes in what you are doing because you believe in yourself. Identify the problem you want to solve. Let's validate it. Let's do a hypothesis. Let's make sure it's real. Start solving it. No matter the number, even 5, I'll celebrate you. I'll write about you in the newspaper. So the opportunity for you to be on my lips is your ability to achieve something, and it's for free.
I wonder what the relevance of that is to some of the generational issues we're experiencing in many parts of the world. If you're young today, you've inherited a lot of broken systems. They don't work in all these areas, health, environment. And what you're saying to me seems to be, and maybe we can close our discussion with just this last question, which is, if you're young today and you're in my country, rates of mental illness have gone up, folks are often criticized as being entitled or unmotivated or what have you. What's the connection between what you're saying? You can't leave my session and be the same, and you become an agent of change. You become someone. And it makes me wonder whether we need to think about the generational dynamics differently. Not, why aren't you working harder? But have we offered you what you're describing, Andy? Mm-hmm.
I think in a country like where you have the issue that you're having, I think the first thing you need to think about is to be very intentional and deliberate about what you want to solve. Mm. And since you can't solve all the problems, be very intentional. If about 10 people are having mental issues, what can I do? Where is it coming from? Identify it. And if all of us, if I have 10 students and each person is taking mental health as an institutional problem and deliberately looking for solutions, I'm sure we can make it happen. There should be a deliberate and intentional effort. they should be willing to make sure that it works. The current generation really, really are not willing to get things where they want fast results, which doesn't happen. They need to be deliberate and very intentional. So on my journey, I'm very deliberate and intentional. You have to be successful. You have to make it work. And I'll be following you. I don't care how long it takes. But if I give you 10 and you change one person, at least you are doing so well. Deliberation and intentional helps at this point in time to make things happen. Thank you very much.
I mean, I feel like I've just listened to a lesson from a philosopher. in the best way. Like this is very humbling. Mm. I don't know. I feel like I've learned so much from our conversation.
Sure.
You better. You're not allowed to have a conversation with Andy and not come out changed.
I have to be successful. I have to have changed on the way out. I know. I was
get
listening.
On it. Get
listening.
On it. No watching Netflix after this. Dr. Andy Ayuku, it is such a pleasure and a privilege to speak with you. I really Thank do you. Come out of this conversation with my own thinking and mindset shifted. And I'm grateful to you for that and for taking this thoughtful time with us here today.
Thank you for the opportunity. Anytime I'll be available. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Insights, solutions, and networking all come together at RSA Conference. Join a global cybersecurity community at rsaconference.com/ITSPMAG24.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of What If Instead podcast with Alejandro Juarez Crawford and Miriam Plavin Masterman. If you liked this story, add this show to your favorite podcast player and share What If Instead podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to connect your brand to this show and its audience, visit ITSPmagazine.com to learn how to sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey.